you ever wanted to know what a cruise missile slamming into a building nearby sounds like? Here it is. One thing about wars is they make good radio. Joni Moosey. Hi, Joni.
Hello.
Hi. And our special guest, Randy Steele.
Hi, Paul.
Randy's... You're a famous radio personality. We're going to be talking about Randy
infamous.
Infamous radio personality. And as the missiles are hitting in the background...
Take cover.
You know how I follow the TWA 800 story, and recently the FBI was dragged over to the coals for pushing the bomb and missile theory and terror bomb theory, and allegedly setting back the whole safety aspect of the investigation into what happened in TWA 800, and how we broke on this show the fact that certain people with naval experience were saying that they believed it was a Navy warship that had destroyed flight 800. Well, I dug up from my archives the tape of Mr. Kallstrom, James Kallstrom, who was the former head of the FBI at the time, who was recently testifying in a hostile climate down in Washington. And here's a brief interview with James Kallstrom, former head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation here in New York.
Increasingly afraid that terrorists could take out an
American plane. I don't think they were wrong. I think we're a function of the environment we live in. I mean, remember what it was like back then, and remember the accounts that I talked about the first 10 minutes. We were preparing for the Olympics in Atlanta. You know, we had the case of the blind sheikh blowing up or conspiring to blow up the FBI building in the tunnels. We had the World Trade Center. We had that horrific situation in Japan with the sarin gas. We had Ramzi Yousef about to go on trial, putting nitroglycerin bombs under the seats of airplanes. I mean, that's the real world. Did we know what happened? No, we didn't know what happened. But 747s don't do that. It's a very safe airplane. So the prudent thing was to do what we did. You end up proving a negative, and it's very difficult to do. But if we hadn't done that, and we're here today and had done none of that investigation, where would we be? And where would Jim Hall be trying to figure out what happened to this plane? At least we know now that it wasn't criminal. And I think that's good. I feel very good about that.
People have, the airports have increased their security since, specifically since this, because of the early belief that it might have
been. Well, that's good.
Do you think they should continue?
Well, you know, I think all the prudent steps that were recommended by the Gore Commission are being implemented, and I think they should be implemented. I think we should use good common sense.
What about our civil rights, though, to be able to come and go and use the airport?
It's always the balance. I mean, that's always the balance. And sure, I mean, how much of this do we do relative to how much things we protect against? Nobody in my business, and I'll tell you right now, wants to change the way we do business. But we don't want to change our constitution. I don't want to go to the airport and wait in line for 10 hours. You know, I don't want to be strip searched every time I go somewhere. We understand that. We feel that way. But we ought to do prudent things. We ought to have good technology. We ought to have good people that are competent, that know how to work it. And we ought to take simple, prudent steps that don't infringe on anyone's rights. And I think we can do a lot of those things. Well, that's another issue. You know, and you can argue both sides of profiling. I think some profiling, if it's not carried too far, if people use good common sense, I mean, common sense overlays all this stuff. Sometimes you have systems and people don't exhibit good common sense. You know, and there's always that little break in the dam. That's why we need the very best people dealing with these issues. Thank you. Thanks. Oh, this is rough.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you. Well, all right, I'll talk to you. Give me the question.
When was the last time the FBI had to prove it?
I don't know. I'm sure there's been occasion when we have, but I don't recall ever doing it. Yeah, it's different. It's different. And I think you always have to be, you have to always have to provide, you know, more meat on the table for the hungry negative crowd than you do for the ones that just ate 2 hours earlier.
Is that the internet? You blame the internet for having changed?
No, I don't blame the internet. You know, the internet, just last night my daughter got some information that helped me, you know, look at a term paper. No, the internet's wonderful. But I think we have to have common sense. You know, some people think that we should just let this technology go wherever it wants, and a big serpent comes in this room and just goes around and bites everybody, this new technology. Don't infringe on that. We've always infringed on things for public safety, for public policy. We could build cars that go down the Jersey Turnpike at 300 miles an hour. We don't let them because it may kill people. You know, and I think we need to look at ways of not letting people come in and bother your 11 and 12-year-old or my 11 and 12-year-old. It's very difficult to do because phone lines don't have any respect for borders.
Conspiracy theories are a little different. We're not talking about pornography.
Yeah, the notion that someone can put a conspiracy theory out and millions of people can...
And, of course, we were listening to James Kallstrom, former head of the New York Bureau of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And that all made me really want to dig back into the files. And I found the Emaud Salem tape. I don't know if the listeners remember who Emaud Salem was. He was the confidential informant who worked for the FBI looking into the alleged World Trade Center bombing case, and he taped himself. You know, as he was making negotiations with the FBI, he got over $1 million for his services. He was actually taping his conversations in order to protect himself with the FBI. So, I mean, all you confidential informants out there should be out there taping your conversations with your handlers. And but what happens is that people like me sometimes get a hold of those tapes with a show on WBAI, and we play them. And this is one of the most fascinating tapes. This is Emaud Salem having a telephone conversation with his FBI handler. And this is about a 50-second long piece of tape that is, to me, one of the most interesting pieces of tape I've ever heard. Don't you think so, Johnny? You heard it for the first time tonight.
It's fascinating.
Okay, you know, all right. I don't think it was. If that's what you think, guys, fine. But I don't think that because we was start already building the bomb, which is went off in the World Trade Center. It was built by supervision from the Bureau and the GA, and we was all informed about it, and we know that the bomb start to be built. By who? By your confidential informant. What a wonderful, great case.
Well,
and then he put his head in the sand and said, oh, no, that's not true. He is son of a bitch. Okay. Well, it's built with a different way in another place, and that's it.
Well, don't make any risk. You know, I'm just trying to be as honest with you as I can.
Of course, I appreciate that.
And as far as the, the payments go and everything like that, they're there. I guarantee you that they are there. I'm just saying they are there. They have to be documented.
Most businessmen these days travel by plane. Dealers in the business of drugs also travel by plane.
I'd like to welcome you aboard our Pan Am Clipper flight to New York and to wish you a pleasant flight. Pan Am 3 takes off for New York with 243 passengers and 16 crew.
Clipper 103, good evening.
They can get a bomb on almost any of our transatlantic flights.
Clipper 103. Come in, Clipper 103. Clipper 103.
That's
Bob
Guy.
Come in, Clipper 103.
I'd like to thank you for flying,
Pan. We've got a real problem.
U.S. had advanced warning of this terrorist threat that a Pan Am flight was going to be down. That warning was not apparently passed on to everybody.
Now, what are the aims of the terrorist? Any ideas?
To unleash a wave of terrorism.
Precisely.
Pan Am is America. Pan Am is America.
Investigations indicate, although the operational people may have been Middle Eastern or Palestinian in origin, in fact, the strings were being pulled by elements within the U.S. intelligence community.
Flight PA-103, Pan Am's Jumbo, the maid of the seas. Flight PA-103, Pan Am's Jumbo, the maid of the seas.
Elements of U.S. intelligence were complicit in that act.
This is Siri.
Stand back now, Wiz. Connecting announcer. Stand back now, Wiz. Connecting announcer.
There's a political side to this about U.S. collusion with international terrorism. We've got a real problem here.
Any ideas?
To wish you a pleasant flight.
That's not the point. This is about politics.
They can get a bomb on almost any of our transatlantic flights.
Interpol investigation is a 44-year-old Syrian arms and drug trafficker, Manzer El-Kassar.
This is about politics.
The involvement of elements of the Pan Am 103 terrorist team in aspects of the Iran-Contra scandal.
You think the Justice Department gives a shit about that?
Agreed to use his other arms routes to purchase and transship arms to the Nicaraguan Contras. Al-Kassar did this, of course, to induce CIA-1 to close its eyes and even protect his Pan Am Frankfurt drug route.
You need a military man for this job.
Fully trained with a clear chain of command.
Precisely. I want to make sure that our passengers are well aware of all we're doing.
Oliver North's shocking connection to Manzer El-Kassar, a man connected with the drug smuggling and terrorist activities of Abu Nidal, Abu Abbas, among others.
That kind of talk makes the passengers nervous.
Pan Am bomb linked to double-dealing CIA drug plot. The CIA faction working with Manzer El-Kassar was aiding and abetting not only his drug smuggling activities, but also his terrorist support activities as well.
Now, what are the aims of the terrorist?
Well, the McKee team, a group of Army and CIA counterterrorist specialists on special assignment for CIA, they were victims of Pan Am 103. The McKee team was in Lebanon looking for the U.S. hostages. The McKee team was badly compromised. They were double-dogged. McKee and Gannon, joined by three other members of the team, decided to fly back to Virginia unannounced and expose the Korea unit's secret deal with Al-Kassar. Their return, as I said, was interdicted by their death in the Pan Am 103 incident.
Investigations indicate that
this is about politics.
Since last week's U.S. bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, protests have stepped up across the world, demanding an end to the war. But attacks are only intensifying, and the Chinese people receive only the latest token words from Bill Clinton.
But again, I want to say to the Chinese people and to the leaders of China, I apologize. I regret this.
Apologies are cheap, but human life is not. And as NATO intensifies its war against Yugoslavia, thousands of civilians are paying a heavy price. As tens of thousands protest across the globe, join anti-war activists here in New York for an emergency demonstration. Condemn the bombing of the Chinese embassy and the ongoing war against Yugoslavia. Saturday, May 15th at 12 noon. Assemble at 1 Center Street for a march through Chinatown and on to the Brooklyn Bridge. For more information, call 212-633-6646. That's 633-6646. This has been a public service announcement by WBAI on behalf of the International Action Center.
Cruise missiles crashing into the lower Manhattan outside the windows. We're covering it live. Oh, no, there's another one, Randy. Johnny, duck! It's coming through the studio!
I'm going to get under the table.
Under the table! Oh, I'm glad they built this studio solid.
I always heard that America liked to bomb radio and TV stations, but I didn't expect it would be this one.
Oh, I thought this would be first.
This is first on the list.
Here.
Yeah, well, I saw him run the Chinese flag up out the window, and I knew. Well, the war wages on, and let them talk rages on. I'm Paul DiRienzo, Joe Marie Moosey, our guest Randy Steele. Randy, let's give a little background on Randy.
Yeah, since the last time I was here.
Yeah, it's been a while since you were here. When we did Alan Weiner's book. Right, we were talking about your experience on Radio New York International. Right? Tell people about the boat.
Well, long time ago, back in 1987, Alan Weiner, who was a longtime friend of mine, along with I and a bunch of other people, built a radio ship up in Boston Harbor called the Sarah. And in 87, we took it out about 4.5 miles south of Jones Beach on Long Island. And into what we thought were international waters, and broadcast a radio station on AM/FM shortwave frequencies for all of 4 days before the FCC shut it down. And ever since then, Alan, as far as the FCC was considering him a pariah, and he had long since had an application in for a shortwave radio station license, and. After about 10 years after the ship experience, which is when we both appeared on your show here, which was in summer of 97 to celebrate the 10th anniversary, the FCC that year had a license application from Alan, again, for the shortwave license. And since he hadn't engaged in any pirate activity, they finally decided to grant the license at the end of 1997. And we spent... most of 1998 building the station up in Maine.
And we have the station with us. Do you have your shortwave radio?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's over there, but actually, I guess it's still on. I don't know if you'd be able to get anything in here.
Let's give it a shot. We're going to get the radio.
WBCQ.
WBCQ, the planet. And what's the frequency?
7415 kilohertz.
7415 kilohertz. And, of course, you know, our very own Patty Heffley has a show.
Uh-huh.
When's Patty show on?
Patty's show is on Sunday afternoons at 4:30 to 5:30.
Right, and you just tune in.
And it's called Rogue Finch Radio.
Yeah.
I don't think with all the electronic equipment in this studio, in this building, we'll get it. Let's see if it's there. No. Only static.
Let's hear the static. It's interesting static. I like shortwave static.
That's mostly equipment static.
It's shortwave on FM.
Actually, right now, that's how WBCQ sounds the best, because you were to turn it on, all you'd hear is Brother Stair, who is yet one of these right-wing hate preachers.
Well, so basically, you have a political difference with the radio station that you just helped found and put on the air. You're the engineer.
I was the operations manager of, fill in this story from when we got granted the license.
Well, let's go back a little bit. I want people to know a little bit about you and why your opinion on this matters. So there's this boat, right?
Yeah.
What was it called?
It was called the Sarah. The radio ship was called the Sarah, and the
what
radio
kind of
station.
What was it?
It was a converted Japanese shipping fishing vessel and transport vessel, which had been converted into what the feds refer to as a doper, a drug smuggling ship, which we had gotten at a very cut rate in one of these, you know, government seizure disposure
auctions.
Yeah. and we looked through the whole ship. There weren't any marijuana seeds on it or anything. The DEA had been very
very clean about it.
But we got the ship and we converted it into a radio ship with a couple of studios. And
what did you load? It had like a transmitter?
Yeah, we had a 10 kilowatt FM transmitter, a 5 kilowatt AM transmitter, and a couple of hundred watts on shortwave.
Right. BAI, for example, is a 50 kilowatt.
Right.
So you're up there in the big scale.
And being on the water conducts especially the AM and the FM signals to the coastal areas very well. So equivalently, especially on the AM, we were equivalent to a full 50 kilowatt AM signal, only running about 5 kilowatts.
And how long from the time you flipped the switch on to the time the government agents were on board?
Well, that was basically 5 days. We were on 2 days, 6 hours a night. Into the weekend. I think we started on a Thursday night, and we were on a Friday night. The FCC came out the first time and tried to intimidate Alan and the shipboard crew that Saturday. So we weren't on that Saturday night, but then we resumed Sunday night and Monday night, and then we were busted, I think, Tuesday morning.
Now, you were outside the three-mile limit.
Yeah. The ship was 4.5 miles off the coast at that time. The limit was supposed to be 3 miles, but the problem is that the United States government, especially at that time in one of the last years of the Reagan administration, didn't recognize any borders. It did whatever it wanted, so it just came right out. And it was even in a report after the ship was busted that the case as presented by the FCC had no particular merit. They just intensely wanted to get our very powerful station off the air.
Now, being out there having this shipboard experience and knowing, you know, the waters off of New York
mm-hmm.
pretty well. I mean, as well as anybody who goes out in a Japanese fishing vessel and parks it 4.5 miles off the coast.
We had a lot of consultants, yeah.
So what do you think about this TWA 800 crash?
Well, when I was on the show before, I think, you know, it had just been, I think, about a month earlier that had happened. And there were all sorts of the rumors and everything going all over the Internet. But I remember very distinctly one of our consultants warning us when we were talking about sailing the ship down through the canal there for, you know, and then off the coast of Long Island, that we should stay close to the coast, that we shouldn't venture too far out into the waters, because in fact the military was conducting exercises off the coast at that time, and we were warned about it back then that's military territory over there. So when I saw the because I also am a satellite hobbyist, I have a big dish on my roof. I pull down satellite all kinds of feeds and stuff. And when I saw the backhauls of what happened to Flight 800, it was so obvious that this was not just a plane that fell out of the sky. This was a plane that had been blown up into literally thousands of little burning and flaming pieces. And just all of the reports that I had heard, along with all of my knowledge that, you know, it's a military testing area out in that part of the Atlantic, it just all seemed to be way, way too coincidental. I could never believe the story that came in. I saw the backhauls. As a matter of fact, I saw a backhaul of some film that was shot by a family that was having a party on one of the beaches out there. And they happened to catch the scene of the plumes and everything. And at the bottom of the water, there was a clear plume. If anybody's ever seen a videotape of a missile being shot from underwater, there was a clear bulge at the bottom of the plume, and then it went up, and then there was a big bulge of smoke where obviously the plane hit. And this was caught on videotape. This was backhauled to the TV stations in New York, but it was never shown on New York television.
So your theory is it was a submarine-launched missile.
That's what the tape looked like. Of course, I only saw it once, and damn it, I wasn't rolling tape on that backhaul.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have
what's
the
a backhaul
evidence,
for people?
A backhaul is a feed from a source, a news event source to the station,
and which you can pick up with your satellite.
Yeah, if it's being fed on satellite, yeah, then you can intercept it.
Right, very interesting. By the way, our number is 212-209-2900. Randy Steele's a guest. I'm Paul D'Arienzo with Miss Joan Marie Moosey.
Call us up.
Call us up. And so let's take the story to the next step. Okay. Years later, 10 years later, you get the license. Alan Weiner gets the license, and you put on this radio station. Where is it located?
Okay, well, the Alan has a farm in Monticello, Maine, which is in the extreme northern part of Maine in Aroostook County. For anybody that's ever just decided for the hell of it, for the beauty of the trip, to drive all the way up I-95 through Maine, right where you go through to Woodstock, Canada on 95, the transmitter is about 15 miles north of the point where you go into Canada. It's right along the border, so it's very far up in Maine.
And how is it? What's the layout?
Well, when we got the license for the station, as I said, I wanted to be operations manager of the station because Alan and I had all of this history together in all of our various activities, and Alan and I had separated because of a disagreement over just personnel problems back after the ship was busted, and we had ended up on shortwave radio actually buying time as Radio New York International every week. And one of Alan's longtime friends who came into the Radio New York International organization had caused a lot of problems for a lot of other people, not me, but for other people involved in the organization. Finally, things reached the breaking point, and I just didn't feel that I had the trust of Alan, so I separated from him in 1991. He wrote a book called, which we were talking about here when I was on a few years ago. And in the book, he basically apologized to me and said that I was right about the reason why I left. And as such, I figured, well, maybe Alan had learned his lesson. So I was back in very tight with him when the station license was granted, the shortwave station license. So I said, I want to be operations manager of the station, thinking that, you know, I could bring in a good alternative, progressive perspective, which I thought was vastly needed on shortwave. And so between January 1998 and September 1998, we spent the time building the Alan spent the time basically building the transmitters and getting the very sophisticated antenna equipment you need to broadcast a shortwave station. The Federal Communications Commission rules require that the lowest power for a shortwave domestic commercial station to serve internationally has to be 50,000 watts. In other words, the FCC usually tells you that you can only broadcast with a certain amount of power. In the case of shortwave, they say that you can't get on the air unless you can broadcast at least 50,000 watts. Now, that's a lot of power, especially it puts a big financial burden on anybody setting up a radio station. So Alan told me from the beginning, well, you realize we're going to probably have a lot of religion on the station. Now, I was brought up in a religious household. My mother was very religious, and I had always been exposed to family radio and the various people that you'll hear on a commercial religious station like a WWDJ. I figured, well, you know, so there'll be some boring religious programming. So what? I just won't listen to it. You know, if it pays the bills, I have no problem with it. Like I don't have problem with just about any programming that you can imagine. When I got to shortwave radio, though, and I discovered what was going on some of these shortwave radio stations, especially started happening on our station after we got it on the air, I was astounded at just how some of these shortwave preachers just, I think they get their money by the amount of hate that they put out, is what I think happens. Especially they love to trash homosexuals and gay groups and lesbians. I have a few
examples.
Are
these fundamentalist Christian?
These people go beyond fundamentalists. These are.
Should we have a sample of it here?
Yeah, this is one of the early things that we broadcast. That in fact was one of the warning signs. And actually, shortly after this, we ended up temporarily, it turned out, taking this individual off the air. This man is named Ralph G. Stair. also known as Brother Stare. He's originally from Brooklyn, and he couldn't make it in Brooklyn, so he went down south to the Bible Belt and became the obnoxious person you're about to hear.
God is faithful to put his warnings in perspective. 6 of the top 11 earthquakes to hit America this century have occurred on or very near to major abortion and homosexual related events. 5 of the earthquakes have been since April 1992. God has been very merciful because most of the quakes were centered in remote areas, or if the quake hit a populated area, not many lives were lost. Thus, they were serving as an awesome warning to this generation. Gay Pride Day, 1993, brought monumental judgment from God. During the entire spring of 1993, heavy rains fell on the Midwest. As Gay Pride Day approached, June 27th, 1993, the rains increased until the newspapers reported that on June 27th, 1993, the Mississippi and the Missouri rivers overflowed their banks like a bathtub of water. And the Great Flood of 1993, the worst in American history, started on Gay Pride Day. Literally, on June 27th, 1993, as hundreds of thousands of homosexuals and their supporters paraded in American cities, the great rivers in the Midwest overflowed their banks. The last 2 Gay Pride Days have resulted in an awesome earthquake that shook the entire western area of the country and a flood that devastated the entire Midwest section of the nation. The warnings of God and from God are becoming more frequent and powerful. And you mark my word, ladies and gentlemen, they are going to be and bring total destruction to a pagan, immoral, ungodly, wicked, sin-loving nation such as ours. Gay Pride Day, 1993, was followed.
Hey, that's like the weather analysis.
Now, here's a guy.
The morality.
We were sitting in the studio, sophisticates as we are, laughing at this, because there is a particular side of it that's funny, and this particular presentation is almost more of a comedic nature to us. But the problem is, when you get these people who are on the air doing this stuff 24 hours a day.
In the Midwest?
In the Midwest, yes. In the great wasteland that is shortwave broadcasting, you set up a climate for what happened to people like Matthew Shepard and the beating and the killing that occurred in Alabama and many of these other things that go on, these beatings that don't even get reported, don't even get into the national news. And a lot of these people who do this, they quote the scripture and they quote, they think that they're doing, if God hates any group of people so much that this guy who calls himself the last day prophet of God will get on and say, sure enough, God is going to send his fire and brimstone and hellfire and all that if gays are allowed to march for their civil rights, then you create an environment of where people get beaten in the name of God, and it's happened. And as I found myself as a broadcaster, as the operations manager, whose name is on not only the program log, yes, in shortwave radio, you still have to keep program logs and transmitter logs, because it's an international broadcast, so I don't know why the FCC wants you to keep these logs, because they don't, you know, they don't do anything about all of the hate and bigotry and whatever that's spewed on shortwave radio.
But what about the question of censorship? What about free speech? What about the First Amendment?
That's a real good question. And it's something that I had to grapple with, because here I am running a 50,000-watt transmitter and a studio and broadcasting this and feeling like my hands are dirty. Yet people will cite freedom of speech as being absolute. Now, one thing that somebody like a Ralph Stair or something would cause me to do would be I would get on my show, of which I had one a week, and if I would hear this stuff, I would criticize it back and set the record straight. For example, Ralph Stair here played back this tape as late as 1998, and he calls himself the Last Day Prophet of God. So anything he says is prophecy. He says there, mark my word, that God will continue to wreak his vengeance if these gay pride days are allowed. One year after he made this tape was 1994, which was the 25th anniversary of Stonewall. Had some of the biggest gay pride demonstrations ever seen in the world.
Well,
all
we had
the
Gilbert
States.
Baker. Gilbert Baker, the inventor of the mile-long...
Designer.
Mm-hmm. Designer of the mile-long rainbow flag.
Yeah.
Was here on this show last week.
And we're still here. In 1994, with these big demonstrations, it didn't happen that there were any big floods or anything about this. So here's the prophet of God saying that all this stuff is going to happen, and his prophecy didn't come true. And I guess that means that he's a false prophet. Of course, that goes without saying.
Of course, I mean, I question the weather analysis from the beginning. Forget whether he's right or not about the day and the weather. I mean, the whole concept of it seems ludicrous.
Well, the phones are backing up, so I want to go to the phones, but let's bring the whole what happened.
Yeah. Okay, so what ended up happening was I felt very bad about this, because I had been trying to sell airtime on WBCQ, which is like a time broker station. In other words, you buy a half hour or an hour or 2 hours and you do your show. I've been trying to sell as much time as I possibly could to progressive people and organizations to make WBCQ kind of a shortwave version of a WBAI, hopefully. That was my intent. Unfortunately, what ended up happening was I would refer all of the progressive people to the station's business office in Kennebunk, where any of the programs that I would try to sell would end up saying, well, you know, I never heard back from Alan. I never heard back from anybody there. And
I guess Christians have more money.
Yeah,
than progressives.
Well, you know, you talk about freedom of speech, and this is all intertwined. So what happened was I found out that when I started finally trying to sell time directly to put people on the air, and when I did that, and I even got one program from a very progressive organization, it's even associated with WBAI, to actually want to buy time on the station. Alan vetoed that sale in order to put yet another right-wing homophobic preacher on the air. Along with that, there was a program that we did on the station live that comes out of New York. It's Johnny Lightning's Radio New York International, which is the outgrowth of the vestiges of the programming that we did on the ship. And I was making a personal appearance on that show, and Alan called me up, and he was very hostile to me about, because I was being hostile to these religionists. And, you know, my freedom of speech was being violated, because he was always telling me, Randy, you got to lay off the religious stuff. I got to get more people to buy religious time, because nobody else is buying time. At the time, I didn't know that my efforts to sell time were being thwarted. So he says, well, what do we do about this? And I said, well, why don't you come up with a hate speech policy? And just say, all right, you know, because I was saying that I was going to quit the station. I didn't want to soil my hands with it.
And that's what we have here is the hate speech policy.
Yeah, and so what happened was, in order to get me to go back and work at the station, Alan said, well, Randy, you come up with a hate speech policy, and if I like it, we'll adopt it, and that'll take care of the problem. And the tape you have there is of Alan reading the hate speech policy.
So I feel we have a responsibility to our listeners to let you folks know how we feel and how we run this station, as crazy and weird as sometimes we do. Of course, if you listen to Radio New York International on Sunday nights with JL, it gives the impression that we really have no idea what we're doing, but it's not true. We really do, don't we? Say yes.
Yes, we do.
Do we really know what we're doing here?
Absolutely.
Right. I know Randy's shaking her head going, no. Anyway, getting serious. The WBCQ hate speech policy. I'd like to read it, ladies and gentlemen. It starts off, WBCQ will not broadcast hate speech. Hate speech is speech that condemns, damns, calls for the death penalty, ostracism, deportation, or denial of common liberties to any individual or group of individuals based on who they are. This policy includes race, national origin, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, disability, and age. This policy extends to all participants in programs aired on WBCQ and hosts, guests, telephone calls, live or taped interviews, speeches, or sermons. WBCQ will not broadcast statements that the Bible or God calls for the death or the death penalty for any person based on any traits outlined above. Now, I want to read that again, because I want you to understand the wording, ladies and gentlemen. We are not against the Bible, okay? We have personal opinions about it. That's not what the statement means, so I will read it again. WBCQ will not broadcast statements that the Bible or God calls for death or the death penalty for any person based on any traits outlined above. Pejorative name calling of any group listed above is not permitted on WBCQ, including sodomites, faggot, racial and sexual slurs. It is the responsibility of each producer on WBCQ radio to understand that if a violation or violations of this contractual clause is delivered to WBCQ for broadcast, the violating material will be removed from the air. Repeated violations in one show may result in the termination of that show at the discretion of WBCQ operations personnel and subject the producer to a review by WBCQ as to the continued relationship between WBCQ and the producer in question. Signed, Alan H. Weiner, General Manager, and Randy Steele, Operations Manager of WBCQ The Planet.
Every statistic showing a social problem has risen dramatically, while the statistics for things that are good have dropped. More police will not prevent crime. More money will not improve the school system. More taxes will not solve the nation's problems. America needs national repentance for rejecting God and permitting and allowing such sin as abortion, adultery, drugs, fornication, homosexuality, and pornography to become common and accepted. This is the most wicked nation that has ever existed in all of mankind. Sodom and Gomorrah will rise up in judgment against us. We are on a course of total national destruction.
American mass media is a marvel of technology. It is whiz-bang, sparkle, glitter, and satellite wizardry. It is a master plan of methods to communicate in a pauper's worth of substance. With such technology, how are people so woefully misinformed? The average American neither knows nor cares about the vast world beyond the nation's border. The average American student knows little math, no history, and very little geography, and nor does he or she want to know. Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly. On November 2nd, 1995, the United Nations General Assembly voted overwhelmingly, 117-3, to condemn the United States for its continuing blockade of Cuba. The international community called the United States blockade a flagrant act of aggression and a blatant violation of international law. That the UN vote was reported at all in American media is amazing, for such news is more often than not passed over entirely by the American press. But where was information about the blockade itself, the effects suffered by the Cuban people, in-depth comments from United Nations delegates and leaders around the world? For a more substantive report, one had to listen to the BBC World News Service, for the rest of the world takes note of events the U.S. prefers to ignore. American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them. Every media enterprise in America reports the drivel that Marcia Clark and Chris Darden are secret lovebirds. But the vote of a global assembly condemning U.S. actions received only scant coverage at best. Why? The media is a source of titillation more than information. The mission of the media is to please, to comfort, and primarily to sell. When TV was developed, it was promised that every American would learn about the world in his living room. When computers were developed, wasn't it said that they would be invaluable learning tools and that children would learn more faster? National scholastic tests show otherwise, as kids master computers as toys and learn splendid hand-to-eye coordination, but little else. The media paints false pictures of the nation and the world, pictures designed to serve corporate masters and to make America look good. This feel-good media approach serves the American delusion of white supremacy, but it does not inform. When the New York Times echoes the National Star, what can the word media mean? How could millions be surprised at Minister Farrakhan's enormous influence among blacks unless the media wasn't doing its job? How could they look at a million and count less than half that number? The major media, like its racist projections, is to be rejected, not consumed, for your very patronage gives it life. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
New York City, there are 700,000 children who live in poverty. Almost half the children in the city are living in poverty, so 44% of the
children. Committee Against Anti-Asian Violence released a report documenting what they say is a pattern of police abuse in Asian American communities.
If my son was shot in the back, then the officer should be arrested.
This kind of ineffective and at times incompetent behavior by NYPD.
Shot my son in the back. He always...
Someday the Times will stumble upon this tragedy.
Robinson, an African-American plainclothes transit officer, was shot several times in the back by a white off-duty officer, Peter Del Debbio, who mistook...
This is a call from an inmate at a correctional facility.
It's amazing to me how we can always afford another policeman to build another prison.
This cut that the mayor is instituting will destroy the ability to care for all the citizens of New York.
The WBAI Evening News, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m.
To the best spot on the FM dial, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Spread the word.
And welcome to Let 'Em Talk. I'm Paul DiRienzo, Miss Joe Marie Moosey, Randy Steele.
And I'd like to mention that tonight we heard our own Paul DiRienzo on the Pacifica National News.
That was
doing
great.
The
Luima story.
Yeah, doing his Abu Luima story.
I'm back.
And the news benefits for it. You are definitely one of the top-notch reporters, not only that Pacifica has, but frankly that I've ever heard. And that's one of the reasons why I got to know you, is because I'm listening to WBAI years ago, and I'm saying, gee, WBAI finally has not only a reporter who's competent in gathering the information, but somebody who really knows how to present it, too.
Yeah, it was great to hear you tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, guys.
Let's take some phone calls.
Our phone number is 212-209 2,900.
Maybe I should just, before we go to the phone call, just put the wrap on the entire story. We instituted the hate speech policy as Alan read it. And in fact, then Brother Stair proceeded to intentionally violate it all during the next week. I ended up taking him off the air for precisely the reasons that were mentioned in the policy. Alan ended up saying the next week that, in effect, retracting the hate speech policy, saying that my removal of Brother Stair was unauthorized, at which point I resigned and I'm no longer a part of WBCQ The Planet.
Welcome back to New York.
Welcome back.
Glad to be back among people who are sane.
Well, we'll see about that.
This is WBAI.
Okay.
And you're on the radio.
Hello?
Yeah. Paul, Joni.
Hi.
I was going to say about Sane, you know. I mean,
who's Sane?
Whoever stays up this time of night listening to all this. I don't know. But it's a great... the story just keep on rolling. That tape that you had of the informer of the...
Right, Imad Salem.
Isn't that great?
That was so surreal, but...
I know. Isn't that weird? I mean,
is there more?
It's a 15 minute. The whole thing's about 15 minutes long.
That's a lot.
And one day,
I'll write a short story on this. You know,
one day,
and this would be perfect for the. This is actually the story. This is it.
Do you have internet access at all?
Yeah, a bit.
Because I've been putting what they call MP3 files, which you can. Listen to with what's called an MP3 player on my website. I'm going to put it on my website right now. It's on a website called radioforall.web.net.
I'm not going to be able to do this anytime soon, but anyway.
Yeah, so people know it. RADIO, radio 4, number 4, ALL, .web.net. And with an MP3 player, you could listen. It's a 48 second clip. And what I'm going to do is we're going to play this. We're going to do a whole program on so called terrorism. And this whole conspiracy, and we'll play this whole tape again, and we'll deal with all these issues in the near future.
Flight 800, I was wondering if any of you had read some of the pieces in New York Review of Books.
I don't know if I saw that one. I know
they put a lot of emphasis on the electrical...
Right, there's a spark in the...
the malfunction.
Right. No. As in a form of communications, you know?
Oh, right.
And they had a couple of charts and stuff. And in terms of activities, it looked like a hotbed of everything happening at the same time. You know, you had all these ships, reconnaissance, this, that, you know.
Sure. There was a
P-3
Orion.
And the interference, you know, that was one that I hadn't heard anywhere else, but... They had a couple of charts and stuff. They showed, you know, exactly at sort of like what was happening at that time. And it was, you know, that time you would imagine not a whole lot going on, right?
But
from what I could, this is a while ago.
There was a lot of military activity out in those waters.
All types.
Yeah,
it was, you know,
there is. Those areas are all military practice zones. And a matter of fact, soon after that, a missile was accidentally fired in the direction of a airliner
that
entered the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people were sensitive to it, you know. A couple of those things.
But it's really, I still haven't had anything that would encompass every possible explanation. But if you want to put one of those together, it's really extensive. And
I don't think the Flight 800 thing is going to go away anytime soon, no matter what Congress or the FBI says. All right, thank you very much, caller. We're going to move on.
On Saturday, right?
There's going to be anti-war protest Saturday.
At noon, right.
Noon, right. And we'll play the card again in a moment.
Great.
All right, great.
All right, thanks for calling.
And you're on the air.
Great, I have a lot of little factoids to run through. First of all, the... Randy, the...
Hi, T-Dub.
Hi. Saturday night, this past Saturday, the guys that are on shortwave, what do they call themselves, the Saturday night?
Radio Free New York?
Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh.
They were... A caller was making some hypothesis about the story of the ship and said that it was on for 10 years. And I called up and actually got on the air and said that I didn't think that was quite the story. I thought it was 2 days, but I mentioned the book and said that I would find out the information. So this is a great coincidence that you're here
10 years
and telling the story. But if you're on good terms with them, I'm sure they were talking about why don't we interview. I don't know if they were referring to them as Patty. Alan and yourself, or who specifically they meant. But they said they wanted to do an interview to get the history right from the source. So.
Well, I wasn't listening, and I haven't heard from them this week, but I am on good terms with them. As a matter of fact, when I was engineering the last show that I was going to engineer for them a couple of weeks ago, they were all very kind to me, and they were all, as was everybody who was associated with the station, wanting to send out a lot of love and everything, and it really did touch me about all of these people. But I know that you've been tracking a lot of this shortwave hate. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you something, that how you personally touched my life. Well, you were here doing the Fast Show maybe about a month ago, and I was listening to the show, and it was very nice when I would come down to New York for about a week or so a month, because I would certainly enjoy the creature comforts of my apartment in New York, as minimal as they may be. And I curled up, and I got all comfortable, and I fell asleep for a while during the show, as is typical this late at night. And I woke up, and all of a sudden, I heard a tape of what I could swear was just the night before on WBCQ. All of a sudden, my clock radio had turned into a shortwave radio.
And you, John Lewis.
You were playing a tape of John Lewis.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I was thinking, oh, no, my head went in my hands, and I said, she's going to attribute it to being BCQ. This is such an embarrassment. Yeah. And when you came out, you said that it was a tape of WWCR, and I went, shh.
Right.
But it still bothered me, because it's downright embarrassing being associated with a radio station that has people like that on the air. And as a matter of fact, that has to resort to that. As a matter of fact, the time that I sold to one of the groups of people who produce a program for BAI actually ended up, instead of putting on the progressive program that I had sold the time for, Alan decided to sell the time to John Lewis.
Oh, it was him?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
And well, I was shocked to
who is
hear
John
him.
Lewis?
John Lewis is this guy who calls himself the Black Robe. He comes out of southern Indiana, and as a matter of fact, T-Dub, we have a little bit. When the hate speech policy was instituted, actually, the hate speech policy came about in the night when I called up complaining to Alan, was I turned on my shortwave radio down here, and I got John Lewis saying, faggots, faggots, queers, faggots, goddamn faggots.
Is this it?
This is how he responded to the hate speech policy.
The houses of the group that I cannot mention on this radio station because their little deviant ears cannot stand that term. But if you'll look in 2 Kings 23 and verse 7, you'll see what it is. And my friends, I guess you want to accuse God of exercising hate language. I want to tell you right now, it wasn't this little wimpy Baptist preacher down here in southern Indiana that came up with that term, you pervert. It was God Almighty. And you read it in the King James Bible, and I'm going to tell you something else. If this radio station or any other station in this country is such a damnable, abominable disgrace to the name of God that the Word of God, the King James Bible, cannot even be read over this station, then Lord God have mercy. God help us. We're in worse shape by far than any of us think when some bunch of pervert deviants can have the stinking most powerful lobby in the United States of America and threaten a radio station to kick somebody off. You don't believe in free speech, you stinking hypocrite. You don't believe in the First Amendment of the United States, and you hate God. You hate everything about the Bible, and I'm going to preach the hell out of you whenever I get a chance.
It's amazing how much he knows about me.
23 and verse 7, and he break down the house of the
deviant
group that cannot stand to be exposed by the Word of God, that were by the house of the Lord.
Well,
now listen, I'm going to preempt or say this about tomorrow night, is that Bob is going out of town again, and Bill Propp and I will be doing the show, and I'll wait and see if Bill has okayed it, but he's producing it. But I had intended, I was trying to do a segment on BAI for maybe 15 minutes or half hour every week of collecting a lot of this stuff, because I think people have to realize that when we talk about kids, shooting guns and do they see it, they get it from Terminator and Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think we have to realize that 800 million people listen to shortwave across this nation, and they're growing up with their parents listening to this. And if you want to blame media, I don't blame media alone, but I just feel that this is part of the atmosphere. I just think people have to hear that this is also on the air.
And it certainly is creating an environment where people who are of marginal perception will think that they're going out to kill a queer in the name of God.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the real problem.
Legitimizing it with the Bible, that infuriates me, but I feel that people need to hear this.
Yeah.
And with the right accreditations, by the way, as far as rebroadcasting, these particular pastors are quite happy to get their message out as many times, so they don't mind you rebroadcasting it.
Well, these are all studio air checks of mm-hmm. ours, so these weren't even directly broadcast by...
Well, in my case,
yeah.
What I was doing.
Now, BCQ is the new home of the hate speech.
Right, yeah. But the original source was WWCR, where I got that, because he's on two or three frequencies at once, so just for as far as techie information goes, mm-hmm. that was also on shortwave one on 12.12. I have to check what it was, but it was simultaneous on another...
It's amazing.
Works that way. You can get it on two bands, right?
It's amazing how much money these people have to buy all of this time, because these hate speech preachers end up on so many channels. Like Brother Stair is on three or four, half of the time when he's on WBCQ now, he's simulcasting on WWCR.
Right.
And
my question is still the same. Is the answer censorship? Is the answer prohibition of certain types of speech, and isn't that a dangerous precedent?
By government, no. By government, absolutely not.
If you're going by commercial standards, like you said, they have more money.
Well, I think that...
The management is going to go with who pays.
Unfortunately, I think that what's necessary is responsibility on the part...